VOA1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear reports from Brian Lynn and John Russell. Katie Weaver has this week's health and lifestyle report. Finally, Kelly Jean Kelly tells us about the presidency of Jimmy Carter. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
The American Space Agency, NASA, postponed the launch of its new moon rocket on Monday because of an engine problem. The launch of NASA's Space Launch System, or SLS, was called off about 40 minutes before launch time at Kennedy Space Center in Cape Canaveral, Florida. NASA said on its website that the problem was linked to difficulties cooling the rocket's main engines to the needed temperature for liftoff. The agency said engineers were continuing to gather data and carry out tests on the engines. The next launch possibility has been set for Friday, September 2nd. NASA has described the 98-meter SLS as the most powerful rocket ever built. It is part of the agency's Artemis program, which aims to land the first woman and first person of color on the moon. Artemis seeks to land American astronauts on the moon no earlier than 2025. It would be the first moon landing by astronauts since NASA's Apollo 17 mission in 1972. Artemis also calls for establishing a long-term base on the moon that could one day launch astronauts to Mars. NASA is calling the first launch of the SLS rocket Artemis 1. The rocket will carry NASA's Orion spacecraft, or capsule, on a test mission to fly around the moon. There will be no astronauts on the spacecraft during the test flight. Instead, three mannequins will be placed inside the crew capsule. They will be connected to a series of sensors designed to measure radiation and movements during the mission. During the trip, Orion is expected to travel 450,600 kilometers from Earth and thousands of kilometers beyond the moon. NASA said this will be farther than any spacecraft built for humans has ever traveled. The mission is expected to last 4 to 6 weeks. The Associated Press reported NASA officials also discovered communication problems late Sunday involving the Orion spacecraft. The problem was causing a delay in communication lines between launch controllers and Orion. Officials said that problem was solved by Monday morning. The main purpose of the SLS mission is to test the system for a future flight that will include actual astronauts. NASA has said that if everything goes well with Artemis 1, a trip involving astronauts could be launched as soon as 2024. SLS has been under development for more than 10 years. It has experienced a series of costly production delays. I'm Brian Lynn. In recent years, Palestinians have taken up bird trapping, or more specifically, parakeet trapping. The hunters make money by selling the birds as pets. The business is a rare source of income in Gaza, which has been under an Israeli-Egyptian blockade since the Hamas group took power 15 years ago. The ring-necked parakeet is an invasive species of tropical bird that has spread in Israel and the Palestinian territories. The bright green birds with red beaks were most likely first brought to the area as pets. In Gaza, they are popular as caged songbirds. Khaled al-Najjar is a trapper and father of two children. An-Najjar said of the parakeet, "It's a beautiful bird, and everyone loves it. I catch them to make a living and feed my children." The birds live on Israeli farms, but when workers come into the fields, the birds fly over the border fence into Gaza. The Palestinian trappers on the other side of the fence catch them in nets and other traps. The job can be dangerous. Israel has established a 300-meter area called a buffer zone along the fence. Israeli forces closely watch the border for possible Palestinian invaders. Israel and Hamas have fought four wars and several smaller battles over the years. Earlier this month, Gaza was the site of 3 days of heavy fighting between Israel and forces of the Islamic Jihad group. Last year, Israeli forces shot and killed a bird trapper. Palestinian rights groups say Israelis have shot at several other trappers also. Once trappers capture the birds, they return to Gaza's crowded cities, where they sell the parakeets to pet stores. An-Najjar says he gets around $10 for two parakeets. At some pet stores in Gaza, a pair can resell for two times as much. There are few rules governing the bird trade in Gaza, where unemployment is around 50%. Bird trapping has severely reduced the local population of swallows and quail, as well as native species like goldfinches. By trapping the parakeets, the hunters might be doing the area a favor. The population of invasive parakeets and mynas, a bird of the starling family, has exploded over the past 15 years. The growth of invasive species has added to a drop in the populations of local species like the house sparrow and the white-spectacled bulbul. In 2019, Israeli researchers published a study that examined data on bird populations. They found that 75% of the most common species in the country experienced population drop in the 15 years before. During the same time, the study showed, populations of invasive bird species grew at rates as high as 800%. Abdel Fattah Abdurrabu of the Islamic University of Gaza said the parakeets threaten native birds like hoopoes because they take over their nesting areas. The parakeets can also be a pest to farmers by eating grapes and figs, he said. For the trappers, and a smaller group of people who catch birds for fun, the activity is a way to pass the time. The blockade limits movement into and out of Gaza,
which is home to more than 2 million Palestinians. Israel says the closures are needed to contain Hamas. Palestinians and human rights groups view it as a form of collective punishment. "There is no work, and there is nothing to fill my time other than hunting," An-Najjar said. "In the morning, my children ask me, 'Where are you going?' I tell them to hunt. Pray for me and thank God, who responds to their prayers and provides a living for me." I'm John Russell.
Researchers at the University of Michigan are studying the ability of people with autism spectrum disorder to notice road hazards. The scientists plan to use their findings to help young automobile drivers improve their driving skills. The effort will be the second part of a project supported by Ford Motor Company. The project includes the university in Ann Arbor, as well as a local driving school. The first part of the study included tests with driving simulation programs. The researchers found that students with autism spectrum disorder detected fewer hazards than those without the disorder. But lead researcher Elise Hodges said that some extra work behind the wheel helped the students drive more safely. "Those folks that underwent training improved in 2/3 of hazards in the simulated drive," said Hodges. She is a clinical associate professor in the University of Michigan's neuropsychology program. Tate Elwood-Maluski is among those who plan to return for part two of the study. He is 23 years old and from Ann Arbor. He was identified as having autism spectrum disorder when he was 3 years old. "I do want to be able to drive and get places where I want to go," Elwood-Maluski said. His mother, Debbie Maluski, helped bring together the partners to make the study happen. Maluski had been growing more concerned about her son's future with no driver's license. She worried especially about what that would mean after she and his father die. So Maluski, a sustainability expert at Ford, spoke with her boss in 2018. She asked her boss, "Would you support a program to help autistic spectrum kids to learn how to drive?" And he immediately said, "Yes," Maluski said. Ann Arbor Academy, a school for students with learning and social differences, hosted driving lessons. Hodges designed the simulated drives and oversaw the study. Ford financed the research. The goal, in part, was to provide a chance for those with autism spectrum disorder to improve their driving skills. Many of them would like to drive, but getting from wanting to drive and being able to drive are two different things, Hodges said. The first part of the study found that, in addition to lower hazard detection, students with autism were more likely to slow down and stop short in front of stop signs. Hodges said she hopes the individualized driving sessions planned for the second part of the research will be successful. "Either way, programs like this can go a long way toward helping those with autism overcome their doubts," Debbie Maluski said. "If we can just free them to think they can do anything, I really think they can," she said. "They need support, we should support them. Hodges said she hopes similar programs appear elsewhere. I would hope that parents would learn that their teens or young adults who have ASD actually may be able to drive successfully, she said. And there may be some tools out there that they may not have been aware of. Hodges said the second part of the study is expected to start in a month or two. I'm Katie Weaver.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Jimmy Carter. His given name was James, but he liked to be called Jimmy. Carter was elected president in 1976. Until he campaigned for the office, few Americans knew who he was. But Carter said his lack of experience with the federal government made him the best candidate. After witnessing years of problems in the White House, many voters appeared to agree with him. However, Carter's inexperience also became a problem. Some of the issues he faced were complex, and at times, they seemed overwhelming. After only one term, Carter failed to get reelected. But in time, his public image improved. His years after leaving the White House are generally considered more successful than his time in office. Jimmy Carter was born in the southern state of Georgia. He was the oldest of four children. His father was a businessman. His mother was a nurse. The family owned a store, as well as a peanut farm and warehouse. Although the businesses did well, Jimmy Carter grew up very modestly. His family's house did not have electricity or running water. But he was hardworking and wanted to be successful. As a boy, he saved enough money to buy four houses. He earned more money by renting them to other people. He also decided to attend college at the United States Naval Academy, and in time, he did so. Carter was an excellent student, and he became a fine naval officer. As a midshipman, Carter worked on one of the country's first nuclear submarines. He later taught nuclear engineering to other crew members. But Carter's promising career in the Navy ended after only 7 years. His father was dying, and the family farm was in trouble. Carter, his wife, Rosalyn, and their three sons decided to return to Georgia and try to save it. The first years back on the farm were difficult, but in time, the business became successful again. Carter began to turn his attention to other issues. He became involved in his church, local school, hospitals, and libraries. When he had a chance to compete for a position in the state senate, he took it. As a politician, Carter developed an image as an independent thinker who tried to save the government money. He also acted and spoke strongly against racial discrimination. In Georgia at the time, many voters did not agree with Carter's support of racial equality. In 1966, even his own Democratic Party did not choose him to be its candidate to represent Georgia in the U.S. Senate. So Carter began campaigning for the office of state governor instead. In 1970, he was elected. As Georgia's governor, Carter was known as a social and political reformer. However, historian Robert Strong notes that Carter did not always work well with others in his party. Strong teaches at Washington and Lee University in Lexington, Virginia. He writes that some Georgia lawmakers believed Carter was arrogant. He could appear to think he was morally right, and they were morally wrong. Carter's difficulty in getting along with other officials proved to be one of the problems he would later face. But in the presidential election of 1976, many Americans seemed to like this quality. The little-known governor from Georgia defeated the sitting president, Gerald Ford. Carter won, in part, by saying that he was different than other politicians. He was, he said, a Washington outsider. Then suddenly, Carter was the biggest insider of all, the American president. One of the things Carter wanted to do was change the image of the president. Earlier leaders, such as Richard Nixon and Lyndon Johnson, had increased the power of the presidency. Nixon had also been shown to be dishonest and resigned from office. Carter promised never to lie to the American people, and on the day of his swearing-in as president, he purposefully tried to keep things simple. He walked to the White House from the U.S. Capitol building instead of riding in the back of an automobile. His wife wore clothes that she had worn in public before. The National First Ladies Library notes that her choice of clothing sent a message of an old American value of thrift, or respecting money, and not spending it needlessly. What she wore was meaningful because the country was going through difficult economic times. The Carters wanted to show that the new government would work to cut costs. They also wanted to show that they were there to help the American people, not enjoy the powers of the White House. But in the end, the Carter administration received poor ratings in surveys of public opinion. President Carter had trouble dealing with U.S. lawmakers, even when his party was in control of Congress. One result was that Carter could not advance many of his ideas for legislation. He appeared ineffective. Many historians point out that, in fact, Carter had a number of successes. He helped reduce the country's dependence on foreign oil. He took steps to make the federal government more efficient and to improve the environment. He appointed a number of women and racial minorities to top government jobs, an important move at a time when many were pressing for women's rights and civil rights. And in many cases, Carter supported human rights causes, both in the United States and around the world. But the public generally did not see Carter for his successes. Instead, many Americans blamed him for the country's economic problems. Some also disliked the way he spoke to them. In one speech, Carter blamed the country's troubles on what he called a crisis of confidence. Some listeners were offended. He also decided that the U.S. would not attend the 1980 Olympic Games in Moscow. The move was meant to punish the Soviet Union for its involvement in Afghanistan, but many Americans believed the move mostly hurt young American Olympians. The administration also faced other problems. The president was never accused of wrongdoing, but other high-level officials were. So was the president's brother, Billy. As a result, Jimmy Carter's public image for honesty suffered. Then came the Iran hostage crisis. conflict between the United States and Iran had a long history. One part involved the Shah of Iran. The U.S. government had supported his rise to power, partly because American interests wanted to control Iran's oil. But the Shah severely abused his power. Many Iranians resisted. Some wanted a leader who would more closely obey Islamic teachings. In 1979, under pressure from those Iranians and others, the Shah fled the country. By now, he was suffering from cancer. So, as a humanitarian act, President Carter permitted the Shah to come to the United States for medical treatment. The move made Iranians angry. In protest, a group of students seized the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, the capital of Iran. They took 90 people, including 66 Americans, hostage. Carter worked hard to get the hostages released. He tried diplomatic negotiations and economic restrictions, but his efforts did not work. Finally, he tried a secret military operation. He sent 8 helicopters and a team of special forces to enter the embassy and rescue the hostages. But that operation failed too. The weather was bad. 3 of the helicopters crashed. 8 Americans were killed. And the public's approval of Jimmy Carter dropped even more. After 444 days, the remaining hostages were released. In exchange, the U.S. government agreed to end some of its economic sanctions against Iran and promised not to interfere in the country's affairs. None of the hostages had been seriously hurt. But the crisis was the final blow to Carter's presidency. A few months before they were released, his effort to seek re-election failed. As president, Carter did not meet the high expectations he had set for himself, and he faced some unusually difficult situations. His presidency also suffered from his problems communicating effectively with Congress, the media, and the American people. But his 4 years as president did leave several marks on the office. For one, he showed that the U.S. president could help other nations and sides resolve their disputes. Carter's best-known success as president was his help negotiating the Camp David Accords. The Accords were a peace agreement between Egypt and Israel. Carter led the talks at Camp David in Maryland. Carter's efforts to protect human rights overseas also influenced the foreign policy of later presidents. In time, his work as a defender of human rights has become his most important legacy. Several years after leaving the presidency, he founded the Carter Presidential Center at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. The center seeks to prevent and resolve conflicts, enhance freedom and democracy, and improve health. In addition to his work there, Carter has helped build houses for people who need them, written books, and negotiated with world leaders to take steps toward peace. In 2002, Carter received the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.